Com, the tech guy, Leo Laporte, the International Telecommunications Union, and various news sources on the internet.
With special thanks to all our weekly news sources and to you, our listeners, that wraps up this edition of this.
Hi, I'm Ronald Weaver from Santa Monica. You're listening to WGXC
Acra.
Monday, May 23rd, tune in to all sorts of creative community voices on the air at WGXC, including at 9 a.m. on the WGXC Morning Show. We'll hear from Elena Sianko, the executive and artistic director at PS21 in Chatham, about what they are up to this summer. At 10 a.m., tune in the Afrosonic Taxi with Echoes of the Congo. At 11 a.m., Brendan Donegan is playing favorites with David Byrne live from the WGXC Hudson Studio in the basement of the First Presbyterian Church on Warren Street. At noon, after the local news, the Deep Three show listens to Jean LaPouge, Nora Lorway, and Holly Herndon, among others. There's new music at 2 p.m. on the Vital Weekly show from Alexander Grimal, Luca Forminente, and Alessandro Incorvia. At 3 p.m., the Tracking the Odds show features Jessica Pavone. And then at 4 p.m., we're live from Who's a Tonic and Kieran Riley with the WGXC Afternoon Show on the radio at WGXC 90.7 FM.
Monday, May 30th is Memorial Day, and Porcupine Soup rounds up where there are events for the holiday in Greene County. Windham has a memorial program at 9 a.m. Friday, May 27th, starting at the Windham Ashland Jewett Central School front bus loop, then heading to the Ashland Cemetery, Windham Cemetery, and Hensonville Monument near the Town Hall. On Memorial Day itself, there are events in Athens, Greenville, Cairo, New Baltimore, Coxsackie, and Plattsville. In Athens, a parade starts at 9 a.m. on May 30th at Wheat Street, Route 385, with stops at the Triangle to lay wreath, and then proceeds up Franklin Street to TGM American Legion Post 187, with speakers and refreshments. Greenville's parade begins at 10:15 a.m. at St. John's Church, then heads down State Route 81 into the hamlet with a memorial service following the parade at Greenville Veterans Park Gazebo. Cairo's parade steps off at 11 a.m. near Schindler's Auto Shop on Main Street and heads to Angelo Cana Town Park with a memorial service with American Legion Mohican Post 983. There is also a Memorial Day ceremony at 11 a.m. at the Coyman's Hollow Fire Department, 1290 Route 143. Coxsackie's parade begins at 1 p.m. on Apple Blossom Lane and proceeds down Mansion Street with stops at the World War II Monument, the Mansion Street Cemetery, and the World War I Monument at the church corners before ending at Village Hall. And Prattsville's Virgil E. Deo American Legion Post 1327 hosts an annual Memorial Day parade at 1 p.m. with a Memorial Day ceremony to follow at the town green.
Wave Farm programs are made possible in part by the New York State Council on the Arts, with the support of the New York State Legislature, the National Endowment for the Arts, the Andy Warhol Foundation for the Visual Arts, the Greene County Legislature through the County Initiative Program, administered in Greene County by CREATE, the Alexander and Marjorie Hoover Foundation, the T. Backer Fund, the Joseph Family Charitable Trust, and hundreds of other generous individual donors, including WGXC's sustaining supporters, who provide critical monthly support to Wave Farm's radio station, WGXC 90.7 FM. Thank you.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Cochrane Media of Cairo, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate. Thank you for your support.
I'm Tom Rowe in Acre with the WGXC News Update. Go to the WGXC Newsroom at WGXC.org for more information about any of these stories. Andrea Macko reports for Porcupine Soup that the Wyndham Ashlett Jewett School District went into lockdown on May 19th after a reported stabbing. However, according to a statement from the Greene County Sheriff's Office, the building was locked down, quote, briefly to address a student altercation, unquote. And while police and EMS were dispatched to the school, no patient was transported. The Sheriff's Office did not provide details, but sources say that a high school student was injured, but not seriously. A high school student was subsequently removed from the school grounds and is now facing several charges in Greene County Family Court, according to the Sheriff's Office. Due to their age, the student's name is not being released. The Sheriff's Office said in a statement that investigators believe this was an isolated incident and there is no current threat to students or staff. The investigation remains ongoing. Wyndham Ashlett Jewett reported an enrollment of 301 students during the 2020-2021 school year. 83% of the student body is white. Read more about the story at porcupinesoup.com. Natasha Von Holdridge is reporting for Columbia Green Media that nationwide children ages 5 to 11 will now be eligible to receive COVID-19 booster vaccination, but Greene County is holding out for more information before deciding on a course of action. The COVID-19 community level is considered to be high in both Columbia and Greene counties by the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. Approximately 65.5% of Greene County's population age 5 and older is fully vaccinated, according to the CDC. In Columbia County, that rate is 78.5%. Quote, I don't know if that's going to be something that a pediatrician has to make a decision on versus public health, but at this point, we would have no plan to establish a pod, unquote, Greene County Administrator Sean Grodin said on May 20th. Columbia County Department of Health Director Jack Mabb said, quote, we found we had a great success at A.B. Shaw and at the Chatham Firehouse because we were able to segregate the kids and they didn't have to see other kids getting the shot at both locations. So we are planning on contacting both of those firehouses again to see if we can run pods there, specifically for those 5 to 11, unquote. Adults who are 50 or older and received a first booster shot at least 4 months ago, or people 12 or older and are moderately or severely immunocompromised and received a first booster shot at least 4 months ago, are eligible for a second booster shot now. New York State will issue guidance on the booster for 5 to 11-year-olds in the near future. Governor Kathy Hochul said after the CDC announcement, during the pandemic, more than 4.8 million children between the ages of 5 and 11 have been diagnosed with COVID-19. 15,000 have been hospitalized and more than 180 have died. Quote, vaccination continues to be the most effective way to prevent COVID-19 and its severe consequences, and it is safe, unquote, FDA Commissioner Dr. Robert M. Califf said. Read more about this story at HudsonValley360.com. Dennis Slattery reports for the Daily News that Steuben County Supreme Court Judge Patrick McAllister on May 20th approved the congressional and state Senate maps drawn by a court-appointed expert. The new districts were finalized 1 month after the state's highest court rejected the maps drawn up by Democrats. Quote, unfortunately, some people have encouraged the public to believe that now the court gets to create its own gerrymandered maps that favor Republicans, unquote, McAllister wrote in his approval filed near midnight. Quote, such could not be further from the truth. The court is not politically biased, unquote. Thousands of letters poured into the court calling on the judge to amend the maps before finalizing them. The maps created by the Democrats would have given the party an advantage in 22 of the state's 26 congressional districts. Now the newly proposed lines include 8 competitive districts. The new lines will be in place for the next decade. New York's congressional and state Senate primaries were rescheduled to August 23rd. Assembly and gubernatorial primaries are still scheduled for June 28th. A federal lawsuit attempting to combine the state primaries in August was filed on May 19th by the League of Women Voters. That suit argues the Board of Elections unlawfully certified primary ballots for statewide races, including the governor's race, since candidates collected signatures based on the now-defunct congressional maps. Democrats could initiate another legal challenge against the new maps, further complicating the process and adding to the uncertainty surrounding the state's primaries. Read more about this story in the Daily Freeman. And read more about any of these stories in the WGXC newsroom at WGXC.org.
New York elected officials are calling on the General Assembly to pass legislation that would transition new buildings off fossil fuels, saying it would make the state cleaner and healthier. The All-Electric Building Act would require new buildings to have all-electric appliances for space and water heating and cooking by 2023. It also would mandate that state agencies identify policies to make electricity more affordable and accessible for low-income residents. Elected Officials to Protect America's Dominic Frangillo says it's about saving lives and money.
Right here in New York, air pollution from burning gas in buildings leads to about 1,000 deaths a year, and most of those are in communities of color. So it's a real, real harm to our public health.
New York burns more fossil fuels in its buildings than any state in the country. Research shows that an all-electric home in New York City would save households $6,800 over the course of 15 years. The bill received a hearing last week and must be passed by the end of the legislative session on June 2nd. William Reinhart is an Albany County legislator who was formerly a professional energy analyst with the New York State Energy Research and Development Authority. He says in the long run, it makes the most sense economically to introduce these new technologies through new construction.
If you compare an all-electric building, new construction now, to a fossil fuel building with central air conditioning, again, new construction, so we're comparing apples to apples, the all-electric building is actually cheaper.
Under the Climate Leadership and Community Protection Act of 2019, New York is mandating that 70% of all electricity generated in the state be from renewable sources by 2030. Officials say getting all new constructed buildings to be fossil fuel free is key to achieving that goal. I'm Emily Scott with New York News Connection. Find our 8 trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
From the WGXC Newsroom, this is the WGXC News Update. Noah Eckstein reports for Columbia Green Media that on May 31st, Hudson's Common Council holds a special meeting to vote on changing the city's ward boundaries. In February, a legal committee voted unanimously to recommend the, and I quote, lease change, end quote, option for ward reappointment in the annual update of the ward boundaries. Under the proposal, 75 residents from the first ward move to the third ward, and 40 residents from the third ward switch to the fourth ward. If voters approve in a November referendum, the changes would go into effect on January 1, 2023. Common Council President Thomas DiPietro said, and I quote, "The point is that some people are going to wake up and find out they are in a new ward. I don't know if that is a big deal or not," end quote. Read more about this story at HudsonValley360.com. Nick Reisman reports for State of Politics that the unemployment rate continues to fall in New York. The State Department of Labor announced May 19th that in April, unemployment fell from 4.6% to 4.5%. New York added 23,600 jobs in the private sector in April, a 0.3% increase. Last April, New York's unemployment rate was much worse at 7.7%. But the state is still not as employed as the rest of the country, where there is a national 3.6% unemployment rate. If you remove New York City, though, the state's rate is much better than the national rate at 3.1%. Read more about this story at New York State of Politics. Mid-Hudson News reports that the State Department of Health announced another 1,474 people in the Hudson Valley Catskill region tested positive for COVID-19 on May 18th. That announcement included another death in Westchester County. Columbia County added 33 new cases, and Greene County added 26 more. The entire area is considered at high risk of COVID-19 spread, according to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. That means wearing masks indoors is recommended so that more people do not catch the virus and so there will be fewer deaths in the future to report. Read more about this story at Mid-Hudson News. And that wraps up the WGXC News Update. For local weather reports, public meetings, community information, or COVID-19 updates, visit our website at WGXC.org. From the WGXC Newsroom, I'm Philip Grant. Have a good day and a nice weekend.
The Buffalo Massacre, book bans, and the enduring wounds of racism. I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! With Dennis Moynihan in our weekly Breaking the Sound Barrier podcast. 10 people were slaughtered in Buffalo last Saturday, killed at a supermarket in the heart of the black community. The gunman, an 18-year-old self-professed white supremacist, armed with a legally purchased Bushmaster AR-15-style semi-automatic rifle. His goal, based on a rambling, poisonous 180-page document he posted online, was to, quote, kill as many blacks as possible, unquote. Of the 13 victims, including three who were injured, 11 were African American. The killer live streamed the massacre on the social media video website Twitch. While the Amazon-owned site pulled down the gruesome video within minutes, it was immediately posted and accessed by millions on other internet platforms. Challenging racist violence demands an understanding of our true history. Instead, a vocal minority in our country are demanding not gun bans, but book bans, trying to suppress the teaching of our country's deep-seated systemic racism. The Buffalo shooter espoused a conspiracy theory known as the Great Replacement, which wrongly posits that traditional native-born white majorities are being replaced by people of color, immigrants, Jews and Muslims, aided and abetted by a left-wing globalist elite. This new population, the racist replacement theory maintains, compliantly votes according to the dictates of their supposed Democratic Party sponsors. The killer, who's in custody, directed his animus at replacers, as he called them, principally African Americans. His slapdash screed, which borrows heavily from another one posted by the racist mass murderer who perpetrated the Christchurch, New Zealand mosque massacres in 2019, betrays a profound ignorance of the history of race and racism in this country.
This crisis of white supremacists domestic terror is likely to get worse,
warns Professor Ibram X. Kendi, founding director of the Boston University Center for Anti-Racist Research on the Democracy Now! NewsHour.
Studies have shown that anti-racist education, that anti-racist books serve in a protective fashion, particularly from white youth, when they are exposed to white supremacy, because through learning about the history, let's say, of white supremacy, they're better able to recognize it.
Several of Professor Kendi's books have been banned or targeted for removal from school curricula and libraries, including the National Book Award-winning Stamped from the Beginning, The Definitive History of Racist Ideas in America. Texas Senator Ted Cruz drove Kendi's children's book, Anti-Racist Baby, onto bestseller lists after denouncing it and several other books during the Senate confirmation hearings of African-American Supreme Court nominee Ketanji Brown Jackson. Professor Kendi continues,
anti-racist education, first and foremost, is teaching our children about the history of white supremacist ideology, the role that white supremacist ideology played in racial slavery, in settler colonialism, in Jim Crow. It's also teaching white children and children of color about all the different people of all races who challenged settler colonialism and slavery and Jim Crow and mass incarceration. It's teaching children that there are multiple cultures, just as there are multiple cultures, colors, and we should value them all equally. It's teaching children that the source of racial disparities and inequities in our community is not the inferiority of a particular racial group, but this history and presence of racist policies. It's teaching children, you know, our racial reality so that they can see that though we look differently, though we speak differently, we're all equals. But the cause of these inequities are indeed racism.
The domestic terrorist in this case reportedly chose Buffalo after searching zip codes close to his overwhelmingly white hometown of Conklin, New York. He then traveled several hours to Buffalo's Kingsley neighborhood and targeted the Tops Friendly Market on Jefferson Avenue. Why the supermarket? India Walton, a former Buffalo mayoral candidate and senior strategic organizer with the progressive organization Roots Action, explained on Democracy Now!,
we know that 80% of the population of the east side of Buffalo are people of color, are Black people specifically, and they have one place to shop. We have dubbed it food apartheid because it is a policy decision. Deserts are naturally occurring, and the fact that there is no food on the east side of Buffalo and there's not the availability of these basic services is a policy choice. There are people who actively chose to not provide services in this community, and for a long time, we've been told that this tops on Jefferson. We are lucky to have it because no one else wants to come into the neighborhood.
The Buffalo mass murderer also considered additional targets, including a school and a church. According to online chats attributed to him, he feared the school would have too much security. Fortunately, he was stopped at the supermarket.
White supremacists are making the case that it's people of color, that they're the source of their pain, which is something that many of these young white male supremacists are being indoctrinated on, groomed on, and thereby carrying out mass shootings,
says Professor Kendi.
And this is only going to get worse if we don't get a handle on it.
Limiting access to guns and expanding access to education about the role of racism in our society and learning, as Ibram Kendi's book title suggests, how to be an anti-racist are fundamental steps to stem the horror of hate and heal these long festering wounds. I'm Amy Goodman with Dennis Moynihan.
This is Tom Rowe in Acre with the WGXC Renewable Weather Report. And the National Weather Service in Albany has issued a heat advisory for the WGXC listening area from noon until 6 p.m. today, May 22nd. The forecast for Sunday is showers and thunderstorms are possible after 4 p.m. Some of the storms could produce small hail, gusty winds, and heavy rain. There'll be a high of 91 on Sunday. That's the forecast, with a light south wind becoming southwest 6 to 11 miles per hour. Sunday night, there's a 60% chance of showers and thunderstorms, mainly before 10 p.m., with cloudy skies and a low around 55. Monday should be partly sunny with a high of 69 and a low around 48. And Tuesday should be sunny with a high of 73 and a low around 50. You're listening to the radio, WGXC 90.7 FM, Acre, Catskill, Hudson, radio for open ears.
We're walking on these back fields, which is littered with these blooming trees, and we have a great view over to the Catskills, right?
That's right. And so you see it's this 100 acres that is a former apple farm, and that's where PS21 is. It's a kind of an interesting concept where you have this state-of-the-art theater and then in the middle of gorgeous fields and meadows and apple orchards. So it's kind of heaven. You know, we want to keep it wild, and at the same time our campus and trails are open to the entire community, and anybody can come in at any part of the day and take a hike, bring a dog for a walk, a significant other.
Could you please introduce yourself?
I'm Yelena Siyanko, Executive and Artistic Director of PS21, Performance Spaces for the 21st Century in Chatham, New York.
So what is PS21?
PS21, Performance Spaces for the 21st Century. The theater was completed in 2018. We kind of launched during the pandemic, I would say, and it's two stages. One is an open-air pavilion theater, which allowed us to be open even during the pandemic, where our audiences could be comfortable, but we also used all of our landscape as a platform and for connection between audiences, nature, and the arts. So we staged productions not just in the theater, but also using our trails and meadows. And that, especially during the pandemic, was very important to connect people to each other, to themselves, to their bodies, use our trails to encourage walking, being in nature, in the sunshine. And I think that kind of way of connecting people and embracing people of all walks of life is really part of our mission. For that, we formed a special initiative called Pathways, Blazing Trails for a Sustainable Future. pathways as both literal pathways that we are, you and I are walking on right now, but also pathways philosophically, pathways to each other, to our bodies, our cells. And it's not just a parallel opportunistic initiative for community engagement where, let's say, a company of dance company comes and then they have time and they do something for the community, but we really are developing a parallel stream of programming for year-round residents. The kind of programming, just to give you an example, it can be ecology walks, but also specific productions, and in particular international contemporary circus, which we think is one of the most interesting democratic forms of connecting people. We also present most of our Pathways programs free of charge or at low cost.
So it sounds like this programming is as a way to make the arts more accessible for people so that it's not just you come and sit and you watch a performance that somebody else is doing, but you're actually able to interact and maybe have those tools transferred, that knowledge transferred, and as a way to just engage people rather than have it just a showcase.
Absolutely. And it's not just about free or accessible tickets, kind of thinking we are going to create it and you come, but it's also taking productions to where people are, but as importantly, inventing and staging productions that involve participatory or immersive component, just like this year, we are bringing a very interesting participatory theater installation from France, designed by a South Korean artist who lives in Marseille. He was inspired by protests, street protests in Seoul, when conceiving of this production. And it cannot happen without the audience participation. So that is one of the aspects of the kind of Pathways programming that we are also very interested in, so that the audience is also engaged as protagonists, as participants, and not just as passive observers.
In the blurb for your programming, it states that you're reaching out to farmers and local people, brewers, all these kind of local people. What is your outreach strategy?
You are probably referring to one of the Pathways programs called Middle Ground, and that's connected to our presentation debut in the United States and North American premiere of Reincarnation by Q-Dance and Kudus Anikeko. It's a company from Lagos, Nigeria. Middle Ground, it's kind of this African hang, an all-embracing shout-out of where all community members participate. So the idea is that culture is not created by famous choreographers or museum directors or, you know, or important people in the community, but culture is created by everybody. And we conceived of this kind of outreach where we hope for the different community members become protagonists. A few years ago in 2020, when we developed a film series called Firefighters Select, when we invited different firefighting squads to contribute to curate one film for each of those series. So our outreach strategy was that we just reached out directly to people in the community. And the same stands for Middle Ground. We wrote to electricians, car mechanics, we knew bakers, farmers in the area, religious leaders, community leaders, also Alima Cuisine, the wonderful West African cuisine chef, who is also going to be taking part in Middle Ground. So it's really, there is no strategy behind it. It's really trying to reach the community directly. And it's really the community that creates life here in Columbia County. I mean, we interact with them. We shop. We eat we eat the food together. And so they are all part of this incredibly important ecosystem of life and in who we are in Columbia County.
So let's talk about that programming coming up. You have a lot of really interesting things coming.